Deborah spent 10 years as an educator in New York City as a high school teacher. She returned to Columbia University to earn her doctorate in curriculum and teaching. In 2009, she co-founded Food Fight, an educational nonprofit based in New York City.
Thank you. So, good afternoon. I'm very happy to be here. I have no relationships to disclose, other than the fact that I think will become evident fairly shortly that I am not a public health professional, nor am I a nutritionist, although I often tell people that I could now play one on TV. But as an educator, I think that we do have quite a bit to contribute to this conversation, and as our previous speaker brought up, there's often a kind of lack or a gap between what's happening in the policy and research world and what's actually happening in schools. And so I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that, or at least bring a frame of reference to you for this conversation. So Food Fight is essentially an educational nonprofit that we started in order to develop, design, and deliver teacher wellness, staff wellness, food literacy curriculum, and coordination of wellness resources to underserved schools in New York City. And really, the way I wanted to start the conversation today was to start by asking you, because I'm a teacher, so that's what I have to do. I have to ask you a question. So I wanted to ask a question to the audience. To say, if I had to pose the question as to whether or not any of you felt comfortable presenting a relatively cogent argument, I'm not going to ask you to get up and do it, but in your mind, a relatively cogent argument about the reason that we are facing this obesity epidemic, the magnitude of the problem, just by a show of hands, who felt like you could give me some reasonably good factors and explanations as to why the problem exists? Okay, that's good. And then the second follow-up question, and I'm assuming most of you are going to raise your hand since we're in a session here about schools, but I'm also curious to see, by a show of hands, how many people are aware of programs either in your local school district or your own children's schools that are geared towards addressing this issue? Great, that's kind of what I expected, that most people would raise their hand. And obviously, you know, we're at the APA conference, and again, this is a session about school wellness, so there is a lot of competence and information and education in this room, in this building, and really kind of in the country at large about what is going on. And we all know the grim statistics. I'm not going to kind of, you know, repeat those to you because I think we've discussed them kind of ad nauseum. But I think the point is that we're all really firmly aware of what the problem is, the magnitude of the problem, and now we also can feel, I guess, slightly better about the fact that we are seeing some small but significant changes to the landscape, right? We just started seeing some information coming out about the fact that there have been some falling off or at least flattening of the obesity and overweight numbers. In fact, in certain demographics, there's even been a slight decline, which is very good news. As you all indicated, many of you are aware of programs, great programs that are going on in schools that are focusing on cooking and gardening and physical fitness. You can't open a magazine, a newspaper, turn on the television, read a blog without hearing something about the obesity epidemic. I mean, it's become the hot topic and has been for quite some time. Clearly, there's a national conversation and, you know, dare I say, a hunger for wanting to dig into this information and understand what's happening. But unfortunately, that's kind of where the good news really comes to an end, because at least from our perspective and the perspective of many of others in my field, in the school food reform field, there's this sense that we've kind of gotten a bit stuck and that we're not exactly sure where to go from here. There's lots of great information, lots of great research, this national conversation, and yet kind of how to move forward still seems to pose some real conflict and concern. So I guess I'd want to ask another question, which is, you know, why are we stuck? And of course, if I knew the answer to that, I'd be driving a much nicer car. And they probably be paying me a lot of money to come here and talk to you. So I don't know. But I do know, and I'm sure that this is not news to any of you, that the issue is really complicated, right? There isn't a silver bullet. There isn't kind of the clear answer. We're not exactly sure what the roadmap is to move forward. But when I say in this slide it's not a question of understanding, I want to be really clear what I mean by that. Because obviously as an educator, I want people to understand. I want to teach people. I want to help people understand the complexity of this issue. But I don't think that we can just put this off on the fact that people don't have enough education. Because again, if I asked you, of course when I was doing this, I imagined a much larger group and kind of seas of hands. But let me ask you again. If I asked you to go out and kind of poll the average American and say, how many people do you think would be able to answer if you asked them, do you believe that Americans or even you individually should be eating more fruits and vegetables to improve your health and wellness? Do you think most people would say yes? Right? I mean, you can not raise your hand, but you could nod. Yeah. So I think most people get it. Most people understand we should be eating more fruits and vegetables. That's kind of the key to health. And yet, that's not what's happening. Right? Less than 5% of Americans under the age of 50 even get close to their daily allowance for fruits and vegetables. And I can guarantee you a lot more than 5% would be able to answer that question correctly. And so just like smoking, where people know that this is not an activity that leads one on a trajectory of a long life and health, people know what they should be doing. And yet again, there's this gap between knowing and acting. And that's kind of where we need to spend a little bit of time. So if it's really not this problem of understanding, it's not so much of a people problem, what is it? And in my mind, and again in the mind of other people doing this work, this is really an issue of a cultural and environmental problem. We have set up in a culture and environment that does not lead people to make healthy choices. And that is particularly true in schools. But given that, given the fact that this environment exists, we are going to have to do something to help people in this environment, this very real environment and culture in which we live, understand this question and understand this problem in a different way. We're going to have to look at this with kind of a different set of eyes and, you know, this thinking out of the box, thinking out of the cereal box, or thinking out of any box in which food can come, because in order to make a shift in our behavior, we're going to have to understand more deeply the environment and culture in which we live. So it's really kind of about helping people to ask a different set of questions and giving them the tools they need to ask those questions. So here's another question for you. What would you say these three things have in common? That top one, by the way, is Confucius, just in case you aren't up on your ancient Chinese texts. And that's Campbell's soup boy. And that unfortunate young person is a very overweight Chinese young person. Any ideas? Yeah, so this actually, I came across this intersection of these ideas because Campbell's Soup just recently released a new ad campaign. It's a campaign that is based on this new idea of the wisest child in the world. He's supposed to be a mini Confucius. And he's telling you that soup is good food and this is what you should be eating and we should listen to our children because they're smart and they know. This was in a New York Times article last month in the advertising section. And in the same section of the newspaper, there was this article that China is now a country facing obesity and diabetes on rates that are so fast outstripping our own. It's as if kind of our issue is irrelevant. I'm not irrelevant to us, but think about the number of people in that country. And what occurred to me is that there is something so painfully wrong about the food industry using this kind of ancient Chinese idea and sacred text and writing to shill for soup, and not only to sell to us, but to also sell to China, to a country who is now going to be besieged by the same health crisis that we have. And it just served to reinforce for me the notion that the food companies will go to any lengths to sell us their product because that's their job. That's what they're in business to do, to sell more food. They're not also in the public health sphere. But what that means is that we have to be much more clever about understanding those forces and resisting them. And really, the food company's answer to the food company's explanation for this is just, well, you know, we're just giving you what you want. You know, we're just selling you the products that are the ones that you are demanding. And really, this whole obesity epidemic wouldn't be happening if you could just exercise a little bit more personal responsibility. So there are no good calories or bad calories. It's just about making good, moderate choices. Soup, of course, falls well within that range. And so if you just use moderation, make good personal choices, oh, and exercise, everything will be fine. So they really want to put the burden solely on the shoulders of the individual consumer. And the food movement, of course, also has a set of answers about what we should be doing to protect ourselves. And their response is also, we should get kids moving more. Right? I mean, Michelle Obama has been really clear on this fact, on this point, as well as a lot of other organizations working in that area. And again, as I mentioned, gardening, right? There's a huge movement to get kids growing food and helping kids cook and prepare food. The problem is that all of those individual programs and ideas still put the focus and the onus squarely on the shoulders of individuals and really laser focuses onto individual behaviors and outcomes for individuals. And I think the problem is that if we keep talking about what each individual child or person in the school is doing, it ignores this much larger question. And what I think it's ignoring is that it's not helping schools to figure out what they need to do to move forward more quickly. So this notion of shaping the path comes from this amazingly wonderful book that I would highly recommend anybody in the field should go ahead and read, called Switch, and it's the subtitle is How to Change Things When Change is Hard. And essentially, shaping the path refers to this notion of removing barriers and providing clear and measurable roadmap for building healthy habits. And what the Heath brothers are really talking about is how to create a paradigm shift. Remember that word from school? Right, a paradigm shift about a cultural realignment around health and wellness and attitudes around food, and creating an environment that fosters that and supports it. So as an educator, and you know, the previous speaker spoke to this as well, I think schools provide this incredibly wonderful platform for which to do this work because we've got a captive audience of people in front of us. But if we've got them, we've got to lower the bar to make the change easier. Wellness policies are good, but if they exist in a vacuum without the context of understanding that this has to be a cultural change, they don't go far enough. So, you know, again, in this issue of kind of moving this focus away from the individual, we'd like to help people think about the focus on being in the school community at large and promoting this importance as a cultural hallmark of an individual school. So what does that mean? What are hallmarks of schools that cultivate a culture of health and wellness? It starts with a wellness mission statement. Now, for those of you who ever worked in business, mission statements come in all shapes and sizes, and sometimes people roll their eyes like, well, what does a mission statement have to do? The fact is that when you make a statement and publish it and put it up, what you are saying is you are stating an intention and holding a priority for what, you know, the fact is in schools, there's so many competing priorities and very small pot of resources. If an administrator said, then this is our statement for wellness, we believe as a school, as a community, this is important, it goes a long way towards announcing that to the community, to the school, and all of its stakeholders. The next point, programs for staff wellness. When we started Food Fight, we started as a program designed for high schoolers to teach high schools about food systems literacy. And then we realized that if we wanted to get the high school students bought in, we needed to get their teachers on board first. And we were surprised to learn that there were no other programs designed to help teachers with their own health and wellness needs. And if we didn't get the teachers to drink the carrot juice, they were not going to be particularly good role models and change agents and leaders for the school. So staff wellness is key. There needs to be curriculum. There needs to be training on the curriculum. The curriculum needs to be Common Core aligned. But it doesn't have to be an either or. This is not teach algebra or teach wellness. There's lots of ways to integrate this material into existing academic domains. Wellness policies for sure, healthy snacks and celebrations and fundraising, all that has to be aligned with the mission. And then having salad bars and gardens and cooking and fitness programs are all great add-ons too. And all of those things need to be happening at once. So leaving you today thinking about moving forward, what I'd like to suggest is that thinking in this cultural model, we should stop worrying so much about changing individual behaviors. Waving broccoli in front of people doesn't work with grown-ups, doesn't work with kids. It can't just be about nutrition education, because this problem is much bigger than just what's on your plate, right? We're talking about a huge social, economic, political, psychological forces at work. It's bigger than the plate. And those are the issues that are going to grab your kids and help them connect to this and help the school dig into this in a way that's much more powerful than let's compare who ate the most broccoli. All the stakeholders have to be on board, everyone from the teachers to the janitorial staff to the food service people. It's got to include everybody. And then last, and I hope the people at APHA are listening to this, is that we've got to fund research that helps support these efforts, that promote qualitative research, that allow us to show environmental and cultural change, which is very hard to quantify. It takes a lot of money, it takes a lot of time, and small nonprofits don't always have the capacity to do that, but it's really important if we're going to move the needle forward. Thank you very much. To find out more about Food Fight, you can look at us online at info@foodfight.org, and I'm happy to take a few questions. Answered all your questions. Yeah.
What did you do practically for the teachers? Like, what would be your first kind of?
So the way Food Fight works is essentially when we identify a school to work with, we provide a two-hour teacher wellness workshop, which is essentially a really targeted intervention that is helping teachers see themselves as being role models and change agents, inviting them to the table, which for many teachers is a kind of revelatory experience. It's the very first time they've actually ever been engaged in the conversation, because usually programs come in and they're so eager to get to the kids, which of course is all of our ultimate objectives, but the teachers are shocked that someone is actually talking to them about their own health and wellness needs. Certainly 2 hours isn't enough to change somebody's life, but it's certainly enough to start the conversation, and it's enough to then open the door so that then teachers perceive any other programs that come in as additive, particularly when we're explaining that not only are we going to improve and increase their vitality and their productivity, but their students as well, once we start working with the students and the curriculum. And of course, we also do training with parents, and we have cooking opportunities and experiences for them to grow food. But it's really getting those teachers on board is a critical element. Yeah, in fact, so we do pre- and post-test surveys, which is, if you were at that USDA session, that's kind of what we can afford to do right now. But we've seen changes in behavior on that survey, but anecdotally, because we asked teachers to respond to an evaluation of the program, we've had so many responses that are akin to, wow, I never realized how putting my big gulp on the desk infected or infected really my students' thinking. And I'm now drinking water. We also bring, we've partnered with Vitamix, and we bring a Vitamix into the school, and the teachers actually fight over who gets to decide what goes in the smoothie in the morning. So it's very inspiring to see the ways in which teachers feel so empowered and feel like they're part of this movement and sparking something in their school. So we've seen unquestionable evidence that teachers are ready to get on board. Yeah, so thank you for asking. Yes, actually, we this year, or I would say 12 months ago, was the first time we started going outside of New York. So we've now brought the program to Texas, Colorado, Arkansas, and we'll soon be in Boston. But we're certainly always looking for school districts with whom to work. So if you are interested in learning more about the program and finding out more about our materials and resources, if you write to info@foodfight, our program associate will get in touch with you and we can start that conversation.
Do you currently have curricula that is aligned with Common Core, and have you seen an increase in the hours spent teaching in the classroom due to this alignment?
So what we have is we have a semester-long standards-aligned curriculum for high school students. And in New York City, I know it's a little different in each district, but there is some latitude for what materials you use to align with the core, particularly since the core is really focused on STEM and ELA. This really was designed as a humanities class. So what we've seen is a lot of high schools, particularly kind of in the 10th and 11th grades, will use it as a humanities program. But we recognize that since not all schools can do that, we also created a resource guide so that teachers can dive in and out of the material as necessary and can use it to fill in gaps in their either science or social studies or social justice work. And we've had it taught by a wide variety of people. I mean, our last teacher who's working on it now is a Spanish teacher. My Spanish is pretty limited, so I don't really know what she's doing with it, but she's using it on a regular basis, and we've seen it across kind of all the different content areas.
And I know there's some other questions, but for sake of the other presenters' times, if we could just wait to the end, and I'm sure they'll
I'm happy to stay and
answer questions at the end.
If you have to go, you could just, if you shoot me a quick email, I'll promise I'll answer the question.
Like a 10-second question. I just want to be respectful of the other side.
Swim upstream. Have you thought about approaching academic institutions, teacher preparation programs, because teachers don't get anything in their curriculum related to health and wellness,
right.
Nutrition, and physical activity.
Right, none.
So
yeah.
Right.
No, it's a really good point, and actually we're in conversation right now with Columbia University Teachers College and their pre-service program, and we're going to figure, and we're also talking with the Teach for America people about ways in which we can infuse that curriculum with ours.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.